long have we awaited this music feature, which is all about saxophone solos. We have talked a bit about the history of the saxophone in the past, but we took quite a serious view of it. But today we look at its increasing role throughout the pop music genre. And to help us navigate our way through this, Massey University musicologist Jared Mackley-Crump's in our Wellington studio. Hi.
Kia ora.
Well,
yes.
When and under what circumstances did the saxophone arrive in the world of pop music?
So, really through jazz, I guess. So when you did the show earlier this year, you talked about that kind of 19th century history, which was primarily kind of European military marching bands. Mm. But because of its loudness, really, it enters into popular music quite quickly through jazz and big band music, I guess. One other reason was that it was... in comparison to some other instruments, it was quite easy to learn, especially if you had a C melody sax. And what I mean by that is it's in the key of C.
Yeah.
Because it means then that you're able to read and play piano music, which is obviously the most widespread printed music. So the saxophone became quite a popular parlor instrument as well, if you were, you know, having a sing-song in the parlor after dinner, as you might have been able to do in the early 20th century. So from there, it kind of goes into jazz, and then once we get into early rock and roll in the, you know, from the mid-1950s, the saxophone is quite prominent in a lot of those early rock and roll songs. And I guess it's used to kind of create a bit of excitement along with the electric guitar. You know, it's brash and loud and exciting. Prominent was the songwriting producing duo of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller from the Brill Building in New York. Lieber was a saxophonist, and so that they, you know, you'll know a lot of their songs. They wrote and produced for many of the early rock and roll artists, and so the solos they put in their songs were either sax or piano. So that they were kind of quite key to the popularization of saxophone and early pop music as well. But also, I guess counter to that, by the mid '60s, jazz itself is kind of moving into kind of bebop and avant-garde. So in other words, it's kind of moved away from beyond pop mainstream tastes. And so what happened is some jazz artist kind of saw the potential of jazz to cross into mainstream pop. And so they started to record or re-record kind of jazzy versions of pop songs. And that becomes kind of the precedence of kind of what became known as smooth jazz. And it was really popular. So Grover Washington Jr. in the mid-60s, George Benson in the mid-70s are kind of key figures. And then once they had these massive success with this kind of smooth jazz sound, obviously other people try to mimic that to get the success. And then as we enter into the 1980s, you've got this kind of explosion of what later became known as smooth jazz. So
yeah,
that's kind of where we get to.
And whose theory was it that the golden age of sax was 1972 to 1995?
So this is a really lucky find. I was just kind of smooching around the internet. So Robert John Woodward did a PhD in 2018 at the University of Western Sydney on the golden age of sax solos, would you believe it?
Great.
So his theory is 1972 to 1995 is the kind of key golden age of sax solos. And he really puts the high point of that into the middle years. So the 1980s is right where we're at. And he's got a number of kind of findings that we'll kind of work through as we play some songs. But he kind of sets up kind of exactly what I was saying, that in the 70s you get these precedents. Bruce Springsteen, you know, his saxophone player Clarence Clemons was in his band from 72. You know, David Bowie, Billy Joel, Glenn Rafferty's Baker Street. So you have some really iconic big songs of the 70s with prominent sax sounds.
Love
so
Baker
then it
Street.
Starts, yeah, I know, right? But it's 70s, so I feel like we can't play it.
Okay, that's fine.
Stick
that's
to
fine.
The 80s. I'm here to find sugar and froth for your Tuesday afternoon.
Where are you going to begin then?
So I feel like we should begin with something cool, though, and that's we can't go past David Bowie, I reckon.
Let's do it. Yeah, lovely prominent saxophone there. And
pretty
not
great.
not just the solo, but also sort of present throughout the first part of that song as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know whether I don't know whether that was a group of players or just he might have double tracked, but certainly there's the sound there. I can't, maybe one of the listeners will be able to fill us in, but I know I read something about that he taught himself to play the sax, or there's kind of a deliberate intent to put saxophone on the songs, and I can't quite remember just off the top of my head what I was reading.
Well, there's plenty of Bowie geeks out there.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
You can help us out. You've got local examples
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, go straight into number two, because so the saxophone was here as well, and I was going to play what's that famous song from 1980? Oh, I can't remember his name, but I thought we'll go with Maxine Sharon O'Neill because that's really prominent as well.
So there's a bit of sax at the beginning and then a solo partway through.
Yes.
So we'll see if we get time to listen to both. Here
cool.
It comes. I wonder if somebody knows who performed the saxophone solo on that. Maxine by Sharon O'Neill. It was a lovely little solo, wasn't it?
It's a good one, that one. That's why I thought we should play that one. I remember the other song, Montego Bay by John Stevens.
Oh, Montego
Bay. From 1980, so right at the beginning of the decade.
Hang on. I'm getting some...
Oh, yes.
Tom Scott played the saxophone.
Okay.
Not one of the existing famous Tom Scotts.
No.
Not the cartoonists or the homebrew singer. Famous LA Tom Scott. Great,
oh,
thank
right.
you.
Oh, right, okay.
Comes from Jeremy Ansell, who knows everything about music.
Yes.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Perfect.
Okay.
So some musical findings. So Woodward analysed and spoke to a whole lot of these saxophone players who played a lot of the iconic solos and kind of did a whole lot of analysis and found a whole lot of kind of what he termed stereotypical musical language that evolved, so certain types of flourishes on the sax that were used kind of again and again and again, which was not in a bad way, but it just set up this kind of recognisable language so people kind of understood what that was. And partly that was because the players would come in and they didn't really have time to practice. They quite often just improvised. They had to they recorded on top of the finished tracks. So they came in and they didn't have a music chart, so they just had to listen and use their kind of intuition to kind of just make something up. So that kind of, when that happens, you tend to kind of get these this sort of language that evolves where the same kind of things are used again and again. So I've got a couple of examples of that. So in the first one, there's both the opening of the sax solo and the end of the sax solo. So the opening, there's kind of an opening run or a flourish, like the player goes up to the note from a lower note and runs through a whole lot of notes very quickly as the vocal fades, and then it ends on a high energy peak kind of climactic note as the guitar comes in, and that's obviously a very common a part of sax solos as well.
So we're going to listen to She Works Hard for the Money by Donna Summer. First couple of minutes, is that right? Oh no,
we're going to fade in last couple of minutes.
Yeah. Okay, here it comes. Enjoy. So definitely had that sort of that rising first note you talked about. I wonder if the beginning of Careless Whisper has a bit of that as well going on.
Spoiler alert, we're going to find out.
Yeah, Jared Mackley Crump, musicologist, is in and he's sharing some of the great sax solos from the Golden Age. By the way, I've been looking up Tom Scott, who performed that saxophone solo on Maxine. He did the solo on Listen to What the Man Said by Wings.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a couple of TV themes. He was in the original Blues Brothers.
Oh, yes.
And has a huge list of credits, one of which I'll see if I can find to surprise you with of the feature.
Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah, there's a lot of there are a lot of people who did, you know, multiple of these iconic songs. It's like there's a group of sax players that were called on again and again, which hence you get this idea of the same sort of musical language as well, because they're the same players playing on different songs.
So the I'm embarrassed to say that we had our staff Christmas party on Friday, I sang the following song in karaoke.
Did you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's super to hear. That warms my heart.
What are we listening for here? So this is the same sort of tropes?
No, this is the kind of opposite. It opens with a sustained high note, so it kind of comes in with a climax, and then the ending, it kind of fades away as I think a guitar takes over and kind of continues the solo.
Okay, here we go. Great song, not performed particularly well by me, I'm quite annoyed, I've got to say.
I was going to ask, did you reenact the actions?
There may have been a lift attempted. great saxophone solo, though.
Yeah,
okay. So that's sort of the musical elements of the saxophone solo, but you're also going to talk about the non-musical elements.
Yeah, so the first one is this idea that from the late 70s into the early 80s, there was kind of a revival of 50s, 60s style that was happening. So you think of movies like American Graffiti, Grease, even Back to the Future, and, you know, into the 80s, Happy Days on TV, Laverne and Shirley. Do you remember the Sha Na Na TV show? It's like they were performing old 50s music.
So like
songs.
Love Potion number 9 and...
And then do you remember Stars on 45?
No.
In the early 1980s, it was like what do you call them? Like a whole lot of clips of songs from the 50s. Yeah. No, it was a single, a worldwide kind of massive hit single, whereas a whole lot of 50s songs spliced together over
totally
a kind of disco beat.
Just before my time, okay.
Yeah, so there's this idea that around this time there was this kind of looking back to the 50s, and indeed, you know, Dirty Dancing was kind of, again, that's looking back. So there's that first non-musical idea. The second one is that the saxophone is suggestive of kind of sex and you know, sexual climax. And that's why the solos kind of hit those big, you know, kind of climactic notes.
Wow.
Yeah. So
interesting theory.
Well, and I mean, the saxophone does have this association with kind of, nighttime economies, you know, like Maxine as well.
Yeah.
There are a lot of songs that when you listen to them, the connotation of the music is kind of nighttime. And the sax seems to go with that.
Baker Street's got a bit of that, perhaps.
Yeah, right.
What are you going to play us to sort of back up that theory?
Well, for the climax one, Maneater by Hall & Oates.
Okay, let's listen without further comment.
Thank you.
Great selection of songs from Jared Meckley Crump, who's celebrating the golden age of the saxophone, 1972 to 1995.
So the in addition to the idea that the sax is representative of sex, the sound is also just sexy. So it's used for songs that are kind of just sexy in sound or about kind of romance and love. And so for that idea, I feel like we can't go past Mr. George Michael. Play as little or as much as you want.
As we can manage, here it comes. So that's the sax, and there is a solo, but it's pretty much just the same thing played a second time, right, Jared?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. So we can just do the introduction without causing great offence to Mr. Michael.
Well, we're probably going to get Last Christmas over the next couple of weeks,
so we'll
limit our exposure.
We don't want to overexpose him; he might get too famous. Before we leave Mr. George Michael, though, I must say, if listeners want something to laugh at, look up Sexy Sax Man on YouTube. He's a Mexican-American saxophonist who's made a name for himself on YouTube by basically just pranking people with playing Careless Whisper on the saxophone in public places. He goes to all sorts of places and just starts playing, and he puts the videos up, and he's become something of a famous YouTube star.
Great. Hey, a bit of feedback on Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
He played the sax himself when he was young. And when Lulu recorded The Man Who Sold the World, Bowie, as an unknown songwriter, played the saxophone.
Oh, right.
Gary Thinks produced the recording.
Oh, fascinating.
Actually, loads and loads coming through, but not many from the 80s. Lots of requests. Mm. The Other Side of the Sun by Janice. Okay. Motel's Total Control, did you consider that one?
I don't actually know that one, I don't think.
Yeah, it's
a good song. I must say, I got quite anxious doing this in the end because there's so many great sax solos. I kind of thought it was just a bit of a laugh at first, but once you start looking into it, there are so many in that time. And so I started to think, how am I going to play all of these in 40
Brown
minutes?
Brown Sugar by the Stones is out of our time zone, but someone says we absolutely can't do this feature without playing the saxophone solo from Foreigner's song Urgent. Are you familiar?
Yeah, I did. I had that on the list at first. And I just kind of removed it because it was kind of, I wanted the aesthetic to be more kind of Careless Whisper. I've had the time of my life. It's great. I had so many on the list. I'm sorry, listeners.
All right, thanks. What's next then?
Sade. So speaking of kind of sexy sounds as well, but Sade, this is another of Woodward's non-musical ideas that the sax also came to represent luxury and sophistication. And so Sade's song Smooth Operator, it kind of fits this bill. It's, you know, about a fashionable, devious man living a jet set lifestyle. And he's, you know, popular with women and breaks many hearts, you know, from coast to coast, LA to Chicago, as the lyrics go. So it's this idea that sax comes to be associated with kind of luxury or upper class lifestyles or being a jet set kind of person.
I don't know if this is the case for other couples, but this is the song my wife sings when I do something really clumsy.
So not so much luxury then.
Might be a Hamilton thing. Okay, let's go to Smooth Operator.
to ask. He's a smooth operator.
Yes, very enjoyable session. Thank you, Jared Mackley-Crump, who's been collecting some of the best saxophone solos of the 80s. And a lot of these were before the MTV generation, of course, but I imagine the music video had a bit of impact to
us
as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of Woodward's other points, is that once we get past 1981 and the introduction of MTV, we're kind of very much into, you know, the MTV era now. And so the video becomes really important. The visuals become very important. And the sax is kind of able to be performed with. It's, you know, it's flashy and it looks good on video. And in the same way that popular music writers talk about the rock guitar as kind of a phallus, you know, the phallic rock guitar, it's the same idea. The, you know, that's curvaceous kind of shape, it's like a, almost like a phallic symbol as well, so it's able to star in videos as well. The other idea about visuals is there's a lot of TV shows that have saxophones very prominently in their themes from the 80s. So I had a massive list. I've got a few just for you. Taxi, Hill Street Blues, Roseanne, L.A. Law, Jake and the Fat Man, Night Court, Cosby Show, Beverly Hills 90210, Happy Days, Cagney and Lacey, and the original long version of Cheers has a sax as well.
Great.
Huge numbers, yeah.
They have that... add that real nostalgia, don't they, which is perfect in a TV theme.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, again, it's that kind of nostalgic sound that it somehow brings up as well.
Mm. Yeah. You missed one, by the way.
What did I miss?
I'll share it with you in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, you've got one. Excellent.
Yeah, I've got
okay.
one for you.
So the in terms of a kind of a song that just kind of represents this idea of visuals is Billy Ocean's Caribbean Queen. The video is interesting because he's kind of singing the song about this dancer as his stage show has been set up. And then it segues into the concert. And the only musician that appears on stage with him is the saxophone player in some kind of, it's like he's a marionette kind of puppet kind of character. It's quite odd, but again, it kind of, it's visual, so it's a thing.
Okay, let's have a listen to Caribbean Queen.
From my mind, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful tone to that one.
Yeah.
We had to wait a while for it.
I think we do.
But we got to enjoy the rest of Billy Ocean's great song, Caribbean Queen.
It's a good one. I love that song.
Jared McLeCrump with the best saxophone solos of the 80s. Is this a TV theme, this next one?
No. So we're up to just my final kind of idea, my final point. And this is not any of Woodward's ideas, but just my own idea. I think the saxophone represents the sound of the city. The sax kind of represents that kind of gritty, jazzy, urban, concrete jungle.
Yeah, you wouldn't have one in a rural sort of folksy song,
yeah,
would you?
And I feel like that's personified by the 80s, right? The 80s was, you know, the greed is good, glittering skyscrapers.
Yeah, and I guess jazz is pretty urbane as well.
Well, jazz
isn't it?
Is very urban, yeah. Mm. I mean, especially from mid-20th century onwards when, you know, African-Americans were migrating to places like Chicago, and that's when jazz, you know, had this explosion of all sorts of things going on. So I think that's part of it as well. So it's just the sound of the city. And there are some great songs that that suggest the city as well. I've got a couple. Which one should we play? I feel like we've probably only got time for one more.
I think the first one looks good.
You reckon? You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey. Yeah. It's in the title.
So I just saw the word Miami Vice. Where does this fit in?
So he recorded it in 1985 for Miami Vice, for the TV show.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It wasn't the theme, but it was just in as part of the show.
Okay. Here it comes. Yeah, that's the sound of Miami Vice, isn't it? That big bass. That is cool. So, and it's also got that very mournful nature that a lot of good saxophone solos have,
true,
Jared.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's have a little blat of the 10th song that you chose for us as
Aretha.
Well.
Yeah.
We should. Because it's not, you wouldn't say classic 80s. Well, I guess it was her 80s period.
It was her 80s period. The reason why I chose it also because, I mean, it doesn't name check city, but again, the idea of freeway that, you know, to have the car to get out of the city or into cities, it's the same kind of the idea in my mind anyway.
Okay, let's listen. That brought back some memories for people. Huge song in the 1980s, yeah. Freeway of Love.
I love her Lady Soul era, but I'm down for Aretha in the 80s as well.
Susan tells me there was a New Zealand-based saxophone player who used to do a bit of work with Sharon O'Neill called Colin Hemmingson, a Wellington musician.
Cool.
But Tom Scott was the name identified, and I looked Tom up, and he has done loads and loads of great songs, a couple of TV themes, and now Jared McLeod.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to play you the outro to a TV show.
I'm looking forward to this.
We'll leave your microphone on.
Okay.
And you can tell me when you've worked out what the TV show is, okay? Okay, here it comes.
Ah. Different Strokes.
Nope.
Benson.
Good guess, but no.
Oh gosh. Sounds so familiar. Yeah. Oh, I can't. No, I'm blank. What is it, Jesse?
Well, I'm very pleased to have stumped you.
You have. And I listened to so many TV themes when I was on YouTube trying to find them. I listened to...
Is that a saxophone in Benson, by the way?
I don't think it was. I think that's why I possibly left it off.
Okay.
There were so many I can't remember now.
Okay, well, that one was what if I tell you some of the actors? Tina Yothers, Michael Gross, Meredith Baxter-Burney.
Family Ties.
There we go.
Oh, I listened to the theme for that. It was in the outro.
Okay. Otherwise, a flawless performance as always. Jared McIntyre.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
See you later.
Jared's a musicologist at Massey University, and he's been talking to us about the golden age of the sax.